respetable público, lucharán dos de tres caídas sin límite de tiempo. En esta esquina, el Santo y Cavernario. Y en esta otra, Blue Demon y el Tumbó.
La arena estaba de bote en bote, la gente loca de la emoción. En el ring luchaban los cuatro rudos.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos a Jumping Nothing. Me llamo es Carlos. Y este es mi amigo Don Miguel.
How's it going?
Y El Wogan.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
And this week, we've watched a lot of lucha. This is Jumping Nothing, if you don't speak Spanish, like I don't. How is everybody?
Pretty good. Yeah, happy. A bit taken aback by that intro.
Man, I was practicing that for so long. I never studied any Spanish or anything. I was just learning how to say that for most of the week.
It was really good, and it took both of us by surprise.
Yeah, there was a bit of look of fear on your eyes for a moment.
I thought I was back in Mexico.
Of course. No. I forgot that you've been in Mexico recently. Yeah. Did you see any lucha, like authentic lucha?
No, I saw lots of masks. And lots of people wearing lucha t-shirts, but no actual lucha. We're in the middle of nowhere.
You said you'd seen a lot of masks.
See a lot of mass. They love churches, Catholicism, Mary. They love Mary so much.
Yeah. How does lucha sit in like Mexican society? It is really popular, right?
Yeah, it seems to be pretty popular. It's not like as big as soccer, but it's pretty big.
Okay.
But it's like big locally. It's not like there's some international superstars or national stars, but it's like local shit going on everywhere.
Okay, so like a city has an arena where there is lucha.
Yeah, that's how it works. And there'll be like a good arena and there'll be a shit arena for all the shitty lucha dudes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like the start of El Santo's career when he used to wrestle in bars and he'd have no personality whatsoever, and then he became El Santo, and then you get to go to the big arenas when you've got a cool name and a cool mask. And then you just do the same flippy shit you did in the bar.
Yeah, it's difficult to understand the cultural context of Mexican wrestling because you know about like the myths of Japan and stuff, and there's books about them and they're very well established, and like Ricky Dozan all the way up through Inoki and Baba and all that kind of stuff. And you know about like the touring circuses and the Blackpool Pier and stuff, but all you know about Mexican wrestling is that it happens to be popular and these guys in masks, right? Like,
yep, pretty much. Although we will be able to talk about its translation into the international audience through the medium of Lucha Underground.
Yeah, that is what we're going to talk about today.
That is a fantastic segue.
And then we should go back to the rest of the world before we go back to Lucha Underground.
Yeah, that segue wasn't as good. Yeah. So that's what we should do, though.
So the rest of the world, what's going on there?
WWE is mostly the rest of the world, so they had Extreme Rules recently, which was fun. Which Michael didn't watch.
Yeah, I didn't watch that. I mean, you'd kind of think, here I am, a guy coming in on a Saturday to record a podcast about professional wrestling. Maybe you'd be motivated to watch the biggest wrestling show that's taken place in the last month. No?
No.
No? Not into it.
What was your thought process behind not watching Extreme Rules?
I said, well, we're watching a lot of Lucha Underground. Chances are that'll be pretty good. I just didn't want the air of negativity. I didn't want the sour taste in my mouth of watching this shit and boring show, and then having to listen to you guys justify it. Like, oh well, I mean, obviously it wasn't the best, but you know, it was kind of entertaining. And yeah.
Well, how about that, Carl? Was it?
I'm sick of this podcast, and I'm sick of you guys. That's what I'm trying to say.
It was pretty entertaining, actually. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm paying $9.99 direct debit out of my bank account for the privilege of watching Extreme Rules, so I'm probably gonna watch it.
Oh, direct debit, man! That's showing up on every bank statement.
Yeah,
you're not going to be able to go in. If you have to go in, if you're moving house, and they want proof of address and proof of income, there it's going to be.
But when
I'm
you
a
ring,
man that pays a tenner a month.
When you ring your bank, sometimes they ask you to confirm one direct debit that you have, and I can't think of any other than the WWE Network.
Yeah,
because
it's a phone call for me. It's like, yeah, $9.99 WWE Network. It's like, yeah. Seriously, mate? What age are you again? Yeah.
You're waiting for the guy on the other end to troll you and just go, $9.99. And then you feel like an asshole.
Yeah.
Everyone on the call is embarrassed. You move bank.
Yeah. You should do one of the sort of... I got one. It's like the wrestling thing for my little brother. Do you know what I mean? You might have brothers yourself. Yeah, mate. Yeah, we're adults. Do you want to go for a beer? Do you want to start a fight? That's how I would try and interact with somebody on the phone like that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So we did watch Extreme Rules. What exciting things happened at Extreme Rules?
I've never seen a wrestling match start in an arena, go away for a while, and then come back after another match.
I feel like I have seen that. I've certainly seen matches that take place in cars driving down highways. What was that one?
Yeah, but they usually follow the matches. Like the one that always sticks out for me, I think it was Al Snow and Bob Holly, and it's for a hardcore title, and they go out into a river and it's madness. But yeah. There's not like, they don't leave the wrestlers, which is what happened with Ambrose and Luke Harper. Luke Harper.
I can remember something like, is that one of the WrestleManias where Roddy Piper is wrestling Goldust, and it starts outside, and then Goldust flees in a car, and then there's a car chase, and it's like a they use footage from the OJ chase.
And then, that's the one I was thinking.
Yeah, and then they end up coming back into the ring.
Then I guess Austin leaves for the duration of the Royal Rumble 1 year, but he's not fighting someone else.
And he's right there. Like, he's underneath the Titantron, getting the crap eaten out of him, isn't he?
Yeah, in theory. Or everybody's looking for him and stuff.
Yeah. Comes back and wins.
It's good, though. So, these guys, because Ambrose gets a bigger pop than he would elsewhere, because it's Chicago, and he's from near Chicago, and Chicago just pops for people who have something about them. But he's not really that over in general, and his gimmick sucks. And Harper's not over at all. And he doesn't have a gimmick, really.
So, he's a large man who does super kicks, which is everyone now. Yeah. So,
it was useful for them to like have this like a way of making the match exciting without the match actually being exciting. They just kick the fuck out of each other. Go, like, nothing makes sense about it. You didn't even see any of this, though.
No, and you're not selling me on it, by the way. Like, it sounds like I made a strong decision.
They go out and Harper gets in a car. Like a black SUV, and then Ambrose dives into the car. The car drives away for two matches duration. Yeah, like they continue that. Two other matches, but because it's False Count Anywhere, the match isn't officially over.
Do you know what?
It's a street fight, so they have to end it in the ring.
Okay, and then they drive back, and what happens when they drive back is Harper falls out of the back seat for some reason.
Yeah, it's just after the New Day have won the tag titles, so. I hope that's not too much of an unpleasant surprise for you. Yeah, you don't seem to care.
I don't seem to care.
But they're doing a promo about their win, and the black SUV thing drives up. He falls out of
Harper
the back.
Harper falls out, which doesn't make any sense, because Ambrose is driving, he's in the front seat. Well, is he like just elbowing him over and over again over the back seat? Like, SUVs are pretty spacious.
I think the idea is that he's like knocked him out, beaten the crap out of him somewhere, and dumped him in the back. But then that happens to be when Harper comes to.
So you think in continuity they were out of the car having a street fight?
Yeah.
In Chicago?
Yeah. I don't think they were driving around beating the crap out of each other. I think they probably wrestled each other to the point where they had to stop the car, got out of the car, Ambrose beat the crap out, and we don't know what
in
happened.
In the streets and alleys of Chicago, as JBL says.
Yeah.
They drove to our mental picture of the streets and alleys of Chicago, which is much better than actually driving to a soundstage alley.
Here's where I am with WWE, because if you describe this to me as happening in basically any other promotion, I would be like, that sounds so stupid. It's fantastic. But because I know it's WWE, I know that there's going to be just a veneer of boredom and despair on top of it. There'll be the commentators fucking going, we got a flying SUV or some shit. Like, just not to stupidity and nonsense. It's terrible. What you've described, I do not have any faith that what you've described is worth my time to go home and then steal this show and watch it.
Okay, well, here's something that will make you even more angry. So there was a last man standing match between The Big Show and Roman Reigns. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that concept?
I just, like, there's so many... there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
There
was. And Roman Reigns was made to look really weak. And also, I don't know if you got this, but it happened to me a lot of times over the last kind of 6 months. Every time I see the Big Show, I miss Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah.
I go, oh man, that guy could have a good match with anyone. Like, him and Reigns could have a good match.
Yeah.
But Big Show and Reigns just had a terrible match.
Can we talk about the concept of feeding people to the Big Show? It's like they're locked in on the calendar, the next pay-per-view after you win or get pushed or whatever. It's like, let's give him Big Show. Why?
I don't know. See, it's the same kind of thing with a feud with Kane. So the next feud that Randy Orton is going to have is probably with Kane.
Yeah, and Kane is, like,
I think,
shit.
Yeah, but it's fine because he's Randy Orton. He's been built. Whereas, like, what? Yeah, exactly. What is the point of doing a thing with Reigns and the Big Show? Unless Reigns totally steamrolls him.
Tell me this. Was Roman Reigns able to lift the Big Show?
No, he didn't really try. He just kept taking tables out from under the ring and then getting put through them himself.
Yeah. So I don't think anybody would be able to lift the Big Show.
No.
So Reigns' gimmick now, or his in-ring character, is that he's able to tolerate a lot of pain. Is that it?
It seems to be. But he did, like, he sold it hard, which was worse. Like, he kept stumbling to his feet. It's not like Cena or Hulk.
Yeah.
Like, you know, beefing up. Like, there was a kind of good finish to the match where Reigns ran up the steel steps and speared Big Show through the Spanish announce table, which was okay, and they set it up. But other than the finish, the rest of the match was crap and made Reigns look weak.
I think it's quite funny that they have the same problem with Reigns as they had with Cena, and they're trying to solve it in the same way, that making him this, like, perennial shit taker who needs to rise above.
Yeah. Cena might be able to lift the Big Show.
Cena could lift the Big
but
Show.
But I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. He's F5'd him, or not F5'd him. What's Cena's move? The AA?
Yeah.
Attitude adjustment.
He's done that to him before.
I don't believe that.
No?
I don't believe that that's happened. Big Show, really tall, very heavy. I don't think anybody can lift him.
He's under 400 pounds, even kayfabe now. So, I mean, it's not like lifting Big Show in his prime when he was rocked full of muscle and he was a million feet tall. He's, like, much more compacted. He's rounded or anything.
Yeah, maybe. I don't see it, though. I don't see anybody lifting the Big Show.
Well, maybe that's the reason that they feed people to the Big Show. Because you, when you think about the Big Show, you're like, it couldn't be done. Nobody could beat this guy. He's huge.
It's never been done before. No one has ever beaten the Big Show. It would be a real shock.
Yeah.
Elsewhere on that card, Seth Rollins beat Randy Orton to retain his title in a screwy finish, obviously. And what else happened? John Cena beat Rusev in a four-corner touchy match.
Yeah, chain match.
Touchy match.
Yeah.
That wasn't too bad for
him. No, it was fine. Yeah. But, like, I did expect Rusev to win, so he has to win at Payback in, like, 3 weeks. What? Besides this, 3 weeks. But
what happened to the wrestlers we like in WWE? Weren't there some of those wrestlers that we liked?
Well, Daniel Bryan can never wrestle again.
Jesus.
Because he's a indie flippy shit merchant and all his bones are gone.
Yeah.
What you liked about Daniel Bryan is the reason he is not currently the WWE champion.
The reason I like Daniel Bryan is when he get a guy in the corner and just elbow him for like 10 minutes at a time. That was my thing. He hasn't done that in a while, though.
He hasn't shouted, like, I've got till five for about 5 years, which is annoying.
Yeah.
That was the best thing.
That was the best thing. I think he was,
He's gone.
He's gone.
Who else do we like? We like some lads in NXT, but they're not there.
Yeah.
They're just hanging around.
CM Punk, he's gone.
Yeah.
Punk is gone. Permanently. And Colt Cabana's being sued.
Macho Man is dead.
Macho Man is dead. It's so depressing. CM Punk, and I think, I don't want to say wrong stuff here, which is libel if any lawyers are listening. But my understanding
don't draw attention to libel.
The doctor who was CM Punk put on blast in the Colt Cabana podcast has lodged a libel.
Sorry, put on blast?
Put on blast in the Colt Cabana
throwing shade
to Michael podcast has sued Punk and Cabana as the medium provided to Punk for libel for saying that he wasn't treated properly or he broke the Hippocratic Oath or whatever the fuck. So that's Colt's money is on the line. And it's certain websites have reported that they consider it to be a WWE lawsuit headed by this doctor. It's politically motivated, etc. But that'd be shit, wouldn't it? If all Colt's t-shirt money, all his shilling over the years came to naught because he got sued for libel by a...
I'm sure Punk would look after him.
That's what I got to assume.
He's got dollars.
Yeah,
but then Punk's going to have to like come back like Leonard Cohen or Ric Flair to make back the money he lost in lawsuits.
Listen, he's a prize fighter.
I get great enjoyment out of going to Leonard Cohen's concerts whenever he's in this part of the world. I hope he never makes his money back.
Is that how you feel about Flair as well?
No.
One last match.
I feel like Leonard Cohen is more or less sort of healthy enough to leave his house.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be as confident with Ric Flair.
Well, we'll be probably seeing a lot more of Flair when Charlotte debuts, right?
Yeah. I guess so.
Charlotte, that's a good segue. She's a royal baby. And this morning, a royal baby was born.
Oh, did that happen?
And a sister, so Princess, I don't know, Bellatrix or whatever they're going to call her. Just a big dull cheat. Benefits scum. But in other royal news, Wade Barrett is now King of the Ring in something that no one fucking saw. Because King of the Ring isn't a fucking thing anymore. What the hell is this?
Yeah, I always liked King of the Ring. I
love King of the Ring. There's loads of good moments in my head of great King of the Ring shit. And now it's just gone. It's nothing.
Wade Barrett is King of the Ring.
Wade Barrett is King of the Ring. He beat Adrian Neville in something that was on the WWE Network. We don't even think it was on a Raw.
Wow.
So, and they didn't debut anybody on King of the Ring. And they didn't.
Well, Neville.
Neville, I guess.
Kind of.
He's doing all right, actually.
He's had good matches. He's lost a lot at the start, but he had really good matches like Ziggler and Rollins and various other people.
He's mad looking, though, isn't he?
Yeah, he's also got terrible mic skills. Like, there's no way he's going to be a star.
Well, he's a Geordie. It's always going to be trouble.
It's hard to understand him. It's not in the same way as it's hard to understand Becky Lynch when she says, disgusting. It's just classic Dublin. Lots of people got good fun out of that. But yeah, Neville is different. He's just permanently unintelligible.
Yeah, that's not good. Anyway, what else happened? Ferran Gagne died. AWA fans in the house?
Yeah. No. I would love to be able to say I'm all caught up about this, I know all about the AWA. Don't.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding when I bought the WWE Network was that it would have the entire archives of every territory, but all it has is 2 years of WCCW Dallas. So someday when they have AWA, I'll watch Hulkster's run. Hulk Hogan tweeted that Gagne was the guy who told him to sell until you can hear the crowd rumble, then don't sell anymore, start shaking and hulk up, brother. So that's Vern Gagne told Hulk Hogan that. Hulk Hogan presented it as a piece of advice, but it's actually his entire gimmick and career was given to him backstage one day by Vern Gagne. So thank you, Vern Gagne.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, whatever. Rest in peace.
Very,
that's callous.
Sorry, I don't know anything about him. Sounds like a great guy. He created Hulk Hogan.
Anything else in the wrestling world? Well, then let's leave it there.
Brilliant.
Lucha Underground after the break. Me buscan por chacalosa, soy hija de un traficante. Conozco bien las movidas, me crié entre la mafia grande de la mejor mercancía, me enseño a vender mi padre. Okay, welcome back. This is Still Jumping Nothing. This is the debut of a new series, of a new approach, a new research strategy for Jumping Nothing. We're calling this series We Know Nothing About.
And today, Michael,
we know nothing about
Lucha Underground.
Hey.
Excellent. That's a top-notch podcast work right there, boys.
So as the person who knew slightly more than nothing about Lucha Underground, I picked us some episodes and a couple of matches that we were to watch. And we would take an impression of Lucha Underground and form opinions and present them like we knew nothing Or wait, knew everything, the opposite of nothing.
Yeah, well, we're gonna having spent about 3 hours watching Lucha Underground, we're now going to explain it to everybody in a very authoritative fashion.
Yeah, and so, all those people probably watch it every single week and have done for months.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people probably watched Extreme Rules as well, and I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they should have a podcast.
Yeah. Like maybe we should do a contest.
Like the anti-wrestling fan. Like, you're still a wrestling fan, but you hate everything about wrestling.
Oh, yeah. I'm a wrestling fan in theory.
Yeah.
Or maybe just a very high standard.
You're like the mythical lost WCW fan that nobody can find.
Yeah.
There you were.
That is a mystery, isn't it? Where did they go?
Yeah.
What did they start watching on Monday instead of wrestling?
NASCAR.
Yeah.
Anyway, we watched a bunch of Lucha. So, the first, or of Lucha Underground, as distinct from Lucha, and there is a distinction, which we'll get into at some point. But, okay, so these episodes open with extremely melodramatic sequences that are not like a WWE backstage sequence. They're, like, strangely lit. They have this, like, boss figure who'll tell people what to do, or there'll be, like, some snippet of the mythology of some wrestler. Like, a masked guy will be sitting there, and a sort of a scarlet lady will be standing beside him, telling him how things are going to be for him and how his dead parents are going to haunt him or whatever.
Yeah.
Do we like that?
Yes. Yes. No, this is... Okay. Right at the start, not only do you get these weird sequences where they're exploring the sort of emotional well-being of many of the luchadors, then I saw in the credits, like... what's his name? Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah,
is an executive producer. Yeah. So they're rich cinematic. Like, they're not WWE's weird gonzo, you know, filmmaking that they do. It was a proper kind of, we're going to try and express the sort of strange heredity of being this wrestler, and you know, being haunted by the ghosts of many other luchadors.
Yeah,
and. I also love, there was one in one of the episodes we watched where there was a training segment, like from the Karate Kid, where a fat luchador is training one of the girls.
Yeah, yeah, that was great.
That's fantastic. And
but then it's like super highly stylized version of like an old school kung fu movie.
Yeah,
these all
yeah.
reminded me of cutscenes of video games now, like maybe 2 years ago, GTA yeah. style, where it's almost cinematic and it's almost good enough to be in a cinema. But it's cheesy as fuck in, like, the best possible way.
Yeah. See, okay, here's the thing, though, right? So after you get all these nice cinematic productions to establish what this ridiculous world is, then the matches happen, and Matt Stryker, who's doing the play-by-play for the matches, sounds like Michael Cole. He'll be saying, oh, of course, this wrestler who has literally death come to life. Oh, and then he goes into a cover, kick out at two. And then he'll continue. He's got the WWE-style... commentary going on. The matches themselves are often quite like, there's sort of you know, oh, you were rude to my girlfriend, but my girlfriend kind of liked you being rude to her, and like, that's lame. And oh, the promise that the cinematic openings make to me is you're about to see Chikara without the irony. You're about to see these sort of mythical folk figures with magical powers climb into the ring, and the announcer's going to be real quiet, and they're going to talk about he's doing this to save the life of his child or some shit like that.
Yeah,
that's what I wanted to see. And they had it at points, but it didn't fulfill the promise quite to the extent that I would have liked.
Well, they still have there's the cinematic stuff, but then there's other show openings, or often just before or just after these weird cutscenes. It'll go to Stryker and Vampiro, and there's a band playing to open the actual show in the temple.
Yeah.
And you go, and they say, you said it earlier, they, this is TV, we're here to make great TV, kind of thing. And it's very much set up as a TV show rather than like 3 hours of matches that are like somehow in a show, which is what WWE is framed like.
So the actual sort of the world of Lucha Underground is these vignettes set up very like one word motivations for the wrestlers. Like, in theory, all wrestling should be like, one wants revenge, one is haunted, one is fighting for his honor and stuff, and wrestlers will do stuff to regain their honor, right? Like Angelico and Ivelisse wrestled each other, and Ivelisse is like, I don't want to do this. And it's like, if you want to prove to me that you're a wrestler, you'll wrestle this wrestler or whatever. So they all have very single-minded motivations set up by that stuff. But the actual setup of like this Aztec temple thing that they have as their soundstage live arena or whatever, it's supposed to be like this baying crowd. It's low lit, and then there's a ring where people settle disputes. That's what they're going for, like in the producer's words.
Yeah.
So you set up the motivation and then you go and have the match. And like, so that, does the setup not work for you, or is it just the inherent like handicap of it being professional wrestling?
Yeah, it's, I think, no, the setup works for me. Like, I love the setup. And I love, I like, okay, first things first, very positive about these shows. They're great fun. It's a case of what you've described is exactly what I want to see. It's this dimly lit, kind of grungy looking place. And I love elements of the production. I love the mat. The sort of beige-ish mat with the Aztec symbol in there.
It looks like papyrus or something, or whatever the Aztec version of papyrus is.
Yeah, it's great. And all the the lucha masks on the walls and stuff, looking like a music club. Like, it's just great stuff. But the problem is, when you call it as if it's a fictional sporting event, like a lot of wrestling is supposed to be, or WWE is kind of, except it's also sort of shit, and they don't quite nail that either. So they just gotta commit to it. It's like they're too afraid to commit to the really, really silly premise of the show, and they should, because if everything is silly, if it's all on an even level of silliness, it ceases to be as silly as it appears.
You just buy it or you don't.
Well, yeah,
it often goes the other way. So the example of Michael Cole being compared to Matt Stryker. So during one of the matches we watched, Matt Stryker said, if you've watched wrestling once or a million times, you know it's coming now, because there's someone about to superplex someone. Yeah. And it's so fucking obvious. Mm. But Matt Stryker actually called, he's like Joey Styles or whatever his name was, calls all the holds, calls them by their actual like gimmick names for different wrestlers, says shades of, you know, anyone from any different promotion, whereas Michael Cole goes, oh no, what's coming next? And you go, it's obviously a superplex. If you've been calling wrestling for 20 years, you know exactly what's going to happen. So Randy Orton does a superplex. He does it all the time.
So that's an issue then. So it's Matt Stryker is the play-by-play guy and Vampiro is the color guy. But Matt Stryker's job, as you can kind of intuit from listening to him, is to bring in the American serious wrestling fan into this stuff, right? Or like, he's there for you if you like wrestling but you haven't watched Lucha, because they do this in Spanish as well. There's another Hugo Savinovich, late of the WWE Spanish announce table, does play-by-play in Spanish, and Vampiro does color in Spanish, possibly using vampire magic to be in two places at once. So obviously when they do it in English, they're pitching for us or someone who would be awake at a time when it's live on American television. So I don't know if it's necessarily fair to criticize him for sort of every now and then trying to point out the links between this and what you see.
Yeah.
Or the differences.
I guess what I want him to be doing is being in a deadly serious fashion saying El Muertes, it derives his power from this stone that he chipped off of a fucking meteorite or whatever the hell, whatever. He has a rock anyway that he's really fond of. But he should be serious. He should be deadly serious talking about, well, I can't explain this, but when that rock is to El Muertes, he just goes the extra mile. And he should, like, rather than being kind of ironic, yeah, I'm making references to Greg Valentine for some reason, because we're all a bunch of geeks watching the stupid show.
What was that? The Greg Valentine? It was like,
when he was talking about, somebody was trying to break somebody else's arm.
Yes, the breaking of limbs.
Yes.
Sometimes people brag about it.
Yeah.
In wrestling history.
Yeah.
I suppose it is weird to pitch your English-speaking fan that highly up the list of, like, nerd chain. Like, because it's so fun. And the Mexican wrestling mask aesthetic is something that's known worldwide in, like, hipster burrito bars and on t-shirts and all this kind of stuff. So should Lucha Underground not be pitching more for the general audience, people who just think the idea of lucha is cool, rather than WWE fans who think WWE has gotten boring, or people who watch NXT every week anyway.
Yeah. Should they be making a point of getting a shot of Brandon Stroud sitting in the front row in every episode? Yeah, I don't know.
It might have been better if they just went full whack at, look at this weird lucha shit. You heard of lucha, this is what it looks
That's
like.
That's what I want to see.
But there is a lot of, like, when you're watching these matches, even if it's guys that we know, like Ricochet wrestling as Prince Puma and Johnny Mundo, who used to be in WWE, whatever his name is.
John Morrison. Yeah.
Like, they're still doing lucha-style flippy shit. Now, admittedly, they're doing it in their own way, like Jim Morrison. So Jim Morrison has been wrestling, doing flippy shit and parkour for ages. Ricochet does all that kind of shit as well. And now they're just doing, adding in extra, like, a million Hurricane Ranas and head scissors and all sorts of other crap.
There is a kind of a tension between, like, if you have two Mexicans, they'll usually at some point in the three-match show be, like, two Mexicans having a lucha against each other. And it's good. It's better than WWE versions when that ever happens. You can kind of follow it. But there's a tension between that and the Americans who wrestle like Americans doing some Mexican stuff. Which is not even to talk about when they actually fight against each other. Like Prince Puma, at the end of the Aztec Warfare thing, there's like strange moments when, because it's Morrison and Ricochet in the ring together with another Mexican guy, and with the Mexican guy they do Mexican stuff, and with each other they do indie stuff, and it's kind of strange. Like, how does the American stuff fit in the actual ring?
Yeah, I mean, I guess does anybody here understand Lucha Libre? Because no, I don't really. No. Yeah.
Famously, Steve Austin, anytime anyone mentions Lucha, he's like, I don't get it. Can you explain it to me? And they go, no. Nobody understands the dynamic of it, right?
Yeah. I think, this is purely, like, I don't actually know. But what it seems to me like is, in Lucha Libre, it's not about kind of, knowing when to grab a hold, brother, for the sake of some storytelling. It's about this constant sense of escalation. And the guy that wins is the guy that does the least orthodox thing 30 minutes after the match starts. And it's this kind of... they're like Power Rangers or something. Although all the Power Rangers fights ended with them doing the big robot. Or the putting all their guns together and shooting. But
it's kind of about guile, right? Like, you're both trained to do all this work. Counters are really important.
Yeah, there's a bit of guile about it, but here's what it is. Who is the most magic of these magic men? That's who wins in a Lucha Libre fight.
So you think everybody has some element of magic?
Yes. Or not necessarily element of magic discreetly, you know. But they... the idea is this: they're going to fight in a way that mere mortals can't fight.
Yeah.
And the guy that fights in the most eccentric way is going to win. I think that's kind of what Lucha Libre is about. So when you've got the sensibilities of guys that have wrestled for WWE that are, have Michael Hayes coming up to them, telling them, don't do that mule kick. That mule kick injured Bret Hart. You can't do mule kicks anymore. Do an armbar. There's, there's a tension there between wanting to do that sort of more conventional storytelling, let's just put a guy in a hold after a big move and let it marble there for a little while, versus, well, in Lucha Libre I have to figure out some way to do something completely stupid, otherwise I lose.
So you've watched more of this than us. Like, is there a good way to mix Lucha and American wrestling? Like, has it worked a lot?
Yeah, no, it has worked with some wrestlers, but then it gets even more complicated, more jarring when to go back to Ricochet with Prince Puma. He finished his match against Drago in the week just gone with this kind of pile driver thing on his neck, and the match was fought in it. So it's a Mexican guy versus an American guy who's wrestled loads in Japan. So it's an American guy wrestling Japanese-American and lucha-ish style versus a really good lucha, partly American-y wrestling style. There's loads of weird shit happening, and then you just suddenly see these suplexes with like neck drops and stuff. And you're going, whoa, hold on. I thought we signed up for Lucha here where everyone lands completely flat on their back and does like loads of floopy shit.
Yeah.
That is quite strange, isn't it? Like the when somebody does some big Western power move, it kind of breaks the... unless they're pushed as the guy who does the big, strong power moves, like Big Zeke, who's got a weird gimmick for himself. But like it's strange.
Big Rick.
Big Rick he is, and yeah, he used to be Ezekiel Jackson in WWE. But it's kind of like, well, if he can just do that, why didn't you just do that? If he can do pile drivers, why have you been trading hip tosses and hurricane runners for the past 15 minutes? Like you have to enter the lucha with the mindset of the luchador, and you can't just half do that because you're wasting your time and energy if you were just going to do a huge lariat anyway.
Yeah, well, actually, so that thing with the, say, if you take the Japanese, American, and lucha styles, one thing that always frustrates me with watching like long WWE matches is the idea that, you know, Randy Orton or John Cena might actually pin someone 1-2-3 with a, you know, scoop slam. And like the amount of pinning that goes on. So that always frustrates me. Like, are you actually doing that? Why did you even bother with that move, first of all? And why do you pin them? Like, this is nonsense. This is not about winning. So I thought a funny gimmick in American wrestling before Brock Lesnar came back and actually did the gimmick is a gimmick of a wrestler who actually tries to win, like by just killing the other person at every possible move.
Yeah.
So in Lucha, it's even more mental because there's like lads doing hip tosses everywhere. You're going, what is that? That doesn't hurt anyone. It's just making you both tired.
But what I would like to see is if somebody does a pile driver on a luchador, that's like conventional warfare. So the luchador should just pop up and be like, that didn't hurt me.
Yeah.
I'm magic. I am a wizard.
Well then,
fight me with your wizard tactics or you will not do me any injury.
So to go back to the arm breaking thing, so Pentagon Jr. broke a series of like four people's arms by doing this pretty serious looking arm break holes.
There's a magical arm bar, a magical luchador arm bar.
He is the most magical of these, or one of the most magical of these luchadors who we watch in Lucha Underground, and he's answering to a dark master who we don't know about.
Brilliant.
Breaking people's arms. So it's like this totally magical, this thing that we can't grasp onto, basically why he's doing it and his motivation, but it's kind of one word motivation. It is, I'm doing it for this higher power.
Yeah.
So great, yeah, that's brilliant. But then he doesn't beat people with like magic flippy shit. He beats people by snapping their fucking arm. And it's really good.
That's quite good. He's good.
He's great.
He's all right.
I like him. Did anybody watch the Mil Muertes Phoenix?
The coffin match.
Yeah, it was the match that was like a WWE pay-per-view main event, but it was lucha between two Mexican luchadors. So it had like the pitch of a really violent Bret Hart Stone Cold around the arena match, but it was lucha.
And it was actually about as classic lucha as we saw, because it was one proper big rudo bastard and a little technico dude flying around the ring.
Yeah,
and admit he got the shit beaten out of him really, and then managed to win because of this American style screw finish, which is cool.
That was amazing. American style screw finish in the sense that a dark lady like licks his stone.
Yeah.
She breaks his magic with like a curse of her tongue.
Yeah.
That was amazing. That was my favorite bit of watching any of this.
And Vampiro, it was really gratifying to hear Vampiro, even though he's kind of annoying a lot of time, and he's Canadian. Like, I don't know where I don't know where he gets off with this gimmick.
He has wrestled in Mexico a lot. I know that.
He has. And he speaks, like, he's a legit, he's like,
Latino.
Legend.
Is
yeah.
He's
like pale
must,
and
he
Mexican.
Must be Latino.
Or he's pale and Canadian, I think.
He doesn't look like the guy that gets arrested for dealing meth, but he looks like the guy that's in the apartment of the guy who got arrested. You know?
That's my second note on my page. This vampire looks terrible. Like,
yeah, he does.
He's put your makeup back on or something.
I like, from time to time, he remembers that when they were bringing out the Day of the Dead guys for the coffin match, he mentioned, well, you know, man, I've been in so many vampire cults over the years, and it just messes with your head.
You can't let yourself get down into that like mental space, you know.
Yeah, so I kind of like from time to time he remembers the gimmick.
He does, and he plays up other people's gimmicks as well. So as Stryker calls all the moves and the holds, Vampiro does so as well, but he's putting over these guys' backstories in really vague, one-wordy, high-concept ways as well. Like, we don't know a million things about Mil Muertes, but we do know his... I think he's from Mexico City and his folks died in that massive big earthquake and he was buried under the thing, and that's why he's called a thousand deaths or whatever Mil Muertes means.
Mm.
A thousand or a million deaths. And it's cool, like, he's the one playing up this stone gimmick during that whole match with Phoenix.
Yeah,
like, Stryker's going nuts because it's a cool lucha match, and he just loves that. But Vampiro loves the darkness and stuff, and a guy called a thousand deaths fighting against a guy who's called Phoenix and Riot has like a thousand lives. It's the absolute perfect match. Like, that's such a good gimmick.
Thinking about it, that was amazing. Like, when they do it right, it's so different and so good.
Yeah.
But obviously they're still to an extent sort of finding their feet. I want to read out a quote from one of the producers that I found. Okay, so this is this guy, Eric Van Wagenen, who is a producer. I don't know what his relevance is, but he was quoted in a big long piece about it. A lot of it is lucha libre bent around Aztec mythology. We have one of the leading PhDs in Mesoamerican studies as our consultant. We go through his research and we find mythological creatures and heroic stories and we build bits and pieces around it.
Is wow.
That's kind of cool, isn't it?
It is cool. It's also weird to hear when a lot of the cutscenes are about Dario Cueto walking around on his like iPhone 6 and in a black suit.
But is he just like...
I think he's just a facilitator and sets up these things. But
maybe he's like Quetzalcoatl.
Yeah.
He is
good,
like,
fun.
Some... I don't know what he... Yeah, like, that's quite strange. And you don't... Maybe it's just because wrestling stories are similar to folk tales anyway, but it doesn't seem like they're going out of their way to do specifically Aztec stuff other than the aesthetic. They're just these are motivations that motivate wrestling matches all across the world forever, right?
Yes and no. Like, in to me, the most standard lucha libre match, I feel like I've heard this this specific story whenever anybody's told me anything about lucha libre. Oh, you should have seen this great feud, this happened. And the feud is some Aztec demon man is tormenting an orphanage, and one of the guys that works in the orphanage, often a priest, puts on the lucha mask to settle it in the ring. And that's where they grab the Aztec mythology and shit. That's where that comes into lucha libre. But I don't know if that's really happening in Lucha Underground.
So the magic is Aztec derived.
Yeah, it's like in The Wicker Man, they're using like Celtic shit to justify this stupid horror movie. They use Aztec stuff to justify the magical monster heels in Lucha Libre.
Okay, well, I mean, that's acceptable, I guess. And what about the fact that all these American wrestlers wrestle in it, sometimes under Mexican-y names with Mexican-y personalities, but they're white Americans or black Americans? And how does this sit beside American indie continuity? If John Morrison goes and wrestles for PWG, which is probably pretty unlikely, how does that sit beside what they're doing? Do they need to just be doing this for us to believe?
No.
Nah, it's like Ring of Honor guys fighting somewhere else. Or, like, you know, how many times do you see Christopher Daniels? Like, we've seen Christopher Daniels a couple times, I think.
Yeah.
And he's, like, doing a different gimmick each time, even though he's still basically Christopher Daniels. One time he'll be doing his old tag team shit from the mid-90s, and
yeah,
one time he's just playing all Christopher Daniels. It doesn't really matter.
But isn't there more at stake in the mythology of Lucha Underground than there is in just doing a slightly different gimmick in different indies, like Steen being a good guy in one and a bad guy in another?
Yeah,
like,
I think it's so much more contrived, and it is a TV show that looks like a TV show.
Yeah,
that is probably all right for it to be so self-contained. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't really know what you're suggesting, Carl. That I would like I saw Mil Muertes walking down the street, didn't have a stone with him.
It's not Mil Muertes. It's Prince Puma and Johnny Mundo.
I guess so. Yeah.
Well, Johnny Mundo, right, isn't really doing anything different. But with Prince Puma, they do say he's got some sort of fucking Aztec history in his family or some bullshit like that, even though he's from Boyle Heights in LA or somewhere.
Is he actually from Boyle?
No, he's from some tiny little village in Kentucky or something.
Oh, right. And he talks
like a kind of... Like, we all know that Ricochet's got no mic skills. He just happens to be a deadly wrestler. Yeah. He talks like a hick.
He is.
Sorry, weird. Ricochet.
He wrestles like an American even when he's wearing a mask, which I don't know why wearing a mask would magically make him into a Mexican. But, like, he pumps up the crowd and stuff. He's like, come on, guys, yeah, let's do it. And then he gives a slap or whatever.
So I do like that about Ricochet. He's one of these guys that's... very smart about his act. Like, he'll never, if he's turning over after doing a big flippy move, he'll never just turn over and try and pin the guy. It's always throws the arms up in the air, looks desperate, and then lands. He's got the theatrical side of his act down, and a lot of the flippy shit guys don't.
Yeah,
they do their flippy shit and then they'll go for a pin.
Well, it's a bigger issue that we'll probably talk about at some point, but like WWE taking all of the good indie guys that are still of an age to take. Like, Ricochet is the last, or he's not the last one, but he's one of the last ones that we'll get to watch at a Revolution Pro show and say, oh, great, I saw him just before he went to WWE or something. Unless he never wants to go.
So this is the thing, Ricochet is great.
Ricochet is brilliant.
But he's not as good in Lucha Underground as he is in the indies.
No.
Really?
He's still really good, but like when you see him at an indie match, he's usually the best thing on the card. Like that, we saw him wrestle Devitt at RPW a year ago.
Yeah,
and it was definitely one of the best live wrestling matches I've ever seen. If not the best.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe. I guess it's also guys he's been wrestling. Johnny Mundo, I don't rate him.
But also, it's a 45-minute show, so you can't really have a 25-minute match.
Yeah.
Like, they had the Aztec Warfare, which was a 40-odd-minute match with 20 people, and that was pretty impressive. But beyond that, you can't really do that kind of thing.
Yeah. We also watched him wrestle that guy that's, like, the big guy in all the indie shows. Indie show we've watched. Yeah, Cage. Every show we watch, like, what's this large muscle guy doing on this indie show with all these skinny men? He's in Lucha Underground now.
Yeah.
He probably finds it easy to get employment as the one large man left in the indie scene.
Yeah. Does he have to prove that he likes video games or something? That he can get into the indie scene despite being large? It's like, why aren't you at a tryout at the Performance Center right now, mate? And he's like, because I love platform gaming.
Yeah, I missed it because I missed the tryout because I was playing Banjo-Kazooie on my emulator. Yeah. That's, yeah.
So Cage is a giant, big muscle freak.
Yeah.
And we can watch him wrestle Ricochet and kind of go, oh yeah, this is fun. On another day, we could watch Ricochet wrestle Sexy Star. And in Lucha Underground terms, this small woman wrestling a dude is completely normal. We probably couldn't see Sexy Star wrestle Cage because that would be insane.
That wouldn't make sense, yeah. Or if it did, it would have to be a real... She'd have to run around him or whatever. I guess
she'd have to kick the shit out of him for him to be able to justify.
Yeah.
It'd be a grim picture.
That is, the intergender stuff is fun, right? Like, is that to do with the magical justification for becoming a luchador? That a woman can just be one?
Yeah.
She can be the woman who pulls on the mask because she has to fight evil.
Yeah, and their vignettes worked really well to establish that the ones that involve the women. The thing about the women wrestling the men is I don't know, maybe I'm just a huge sexist, but I find I find they have to be really limited. Like, they have to be really careful because there's such a fine line where it tips over between these are two cool, very talented wrestlers just doing wrestling.
Yeah.
Into an aesthetic of violence against women.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a fine line, and it's so suddenly that it becomes kind of uncomfortable, I think.
It's pretty uncommon. Like, there's a couple American indie promotions doing it a little bit, but there's a reason that you don't hear about it that much, because it usually doesn't work that well. But in a kind of more lucha-leaning context where people are doing hip tosses and stuff, and it's sold as a legit move, you can do this kind of thing. So Pentagon Jr., despite having broken a dozen arms in a row, can wrestle Sexy Star and they can have a cool lucha match and you kind of go, oh, that was cool, and then Sexy Star wins.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like, they don't put it over as, oh, holy shit, a woman beat this eater of souls. It's like, a wrestler beat this eater of souls.
Yeah. And that does work. It's just, again, it's the case, if it was pure lucha libre and pure magic, it'd be fine. But the moment one of the women gets a really fucking nasty lariat, it looks like, Jesus, hang on a minute, that's like, that looks like something you'd almost do in real life. And then it breaks down. Again, maybe I'm just being oversensitive about it, but...
No, I agree. Like, the fact that when it's pure lucha, or what we would see as pure lucha, having never watched any real lucha...
What we're guessing is pure lucha.
Yeah, when it's that continuity, it's fine, and it's really fun and cool. But the fact that there is this, like, eating away of American wrestling into Lucha Underground, because they're trying to get a crossover audience, and they have something cool going on, or whatever, they want to mix the two styles, but you've got to be very careful about how and when you mix those two styles, right?
Yeah.
It's like watching if we were to watch Big Rick against Sexy Star, it's because of the style that Big Rick is wrestling, he's not going to have a lucha match, so it's completely unbelievable, whereas if you have one of the lucha wrestlers do it, it's fine. Lucha wrestlers, luchador, I think is the term.
Yeah, but on the subject of the women, the two women we saw, at least that I can remember, Sexy Star and Ivelisse, both really good. Sexy Star in particular.
Yeah.
She's really outstanding. And yeah, I guess, like, leaving that kind of wariness aside, like, I'm kind of going, I hope this doesn't become uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I hope somebody cool doesn't walk into my bedroom while I'm watching this and something grim takes place. Great matches and, like... really, like, because that's the nice thing as well, is it's like, normally, obviously, like you were saying earlier, in a lucha match, it's this big kind of fat guy Rudo and skinny Technico who's flipping all over the place, and so you have that kind of, to do a lot of moves, you got that heavy base and then the guy that's doing the head scissors and stuff. When you're using women, they can go toe to toe with even the sort of skinnier luchadors, which Lucha Underground is very heavy on.
Yeah.
Because as we said, there are more skinny guys in the American indie scene now than there are dudes with muscles.
Yeah.
That they kind of interact really well, because it's like they can use the sort of medium sized men as the heavy base that the Rudos would traditionally be providing.
Is it better or worse than the way Chikara do intergender wrestling? Because Chikara basically just doesn't talk about it.
Yeah, it's similar. It's just that in Chikara, I always know I'm safe because it is so stupid and jokey and ironic.
That's how they get the mythos that allows it. It's because it's so stupid.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas in this, there are guys doing heavy pile drivers and power bombs and stuff, so you'd be worried. I guess that's the difference.
Yeah.
I do miss Sarah Del Rey, actually. She was the best for that kind of thing.
Okay, the idea of the 1 hour small arena show as the best alternative to the big bloated WWE product, because we've got NXT doing it really well in a circumstance that's fairly similar to a setup that's fairly similar to what Lucha Underground are doing, and then Lucha Underground, which we all really liked, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is that the way to compete then?
It's, I think, if you can do a small concentrated thing, like if Lucha Underground wants to do a 3 hour show and compete with a Raw, or like not head on, but to do a comparable product, you need so many wrestlers, you need so much more budget, you need so much more effort. Like, to just do a nice small concentrated thing well is a good and honorable start.
Mm.
I don't think anyone's going to take too many pops at like the Lucha Underground or NXT products. As actually, NXT has been a bit crap for the last 2 months. I'll put it out there.
Yeah.
I've been watching it, but...
Yeah, I've dipped in and out of it. I haven't been too keen on it. Here's a nice difference between, excuse me, Lucha Underground and NXT, is that I think a part of the one-hour format is their production, like their direction is slick as hell.
Yeah.
Like, they have a lot of cameras around the ring, and there are guys that are hunting down. They've clearly practiced. If I see a guy go into the corner, I gotta climb up on the ring post and I'm gonna bring the camera up like this.
Yeah.
And then I know as soon as they leave the thing, I'm gonna go back. Like, it's just, they're clearly, they've got a team that's really well trained in photographing this thing in a really smart way. And that's great for a 1 hour product. If you were a live show, you're not gonna be able to do that. You're gonna have to do whatever WWE does, which is the hard camera and maybe two guys running around, and somebody at the control panel just going, "Hey, go to camera two."
Like, all right, NXT is not live, but you know the like editors and cameramen and everything on NXT are developmental as well.
Yeah,
they're all working for Kevin Dunn though, who hasn't evolved his practice of directing a wrestling program in like 15 years.
Yeah, so the fact that they come at this from a completely, it's Robert Rodriguez, right? It's his cable channel and it's his
production company. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's just got this idea that it's not supposed to be wrestling. Like we know it. It's not a new version of that. It's a new thing that uses some of what we're familiar with.
Yeah.
And that is its selling point, really, is it?
Yeah. And it is. Like, they're really making a case for that 1 hour format with just how hot their production looks.
But could someone else do that? Is it because it's set up to be a production?
I think their stories are tied every week, so you're kind of focused in your hour.
Yeah.
And as long as you get a slick product that is consistent ish most weeks, you're in there and you like it.
And Ring of Honor does a 1 hour show, which nobody talks about because it's crap. And
Ring of Honor's too serious. Like, it's had a sense of humor in a long time. Whereas this product that we're talking about, what's it called?
Lucha Underground.
Is like, it's like Blazing Saddles of wrestling or something. It's like very serious, but in a completely non-serious way. Yeah,
it's like serious, but at a hysterical pitch of seriousness.
Yeah. It's like a... Because I wouldn't say it's like supposed to be funny or... It's like a soap opera.
Yeah.
It's like, those are deadly fucking serious all the time. They're incredibly sincere, but they're fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Ring of Honor's production hasn't improved. It looks Bush League. It looks like a guy and a couple of, like, you know, camcorders from the mid-2000s are filming this fucking thing.
Yeah.
And they use a format similar to what you'd expect from WWE. Guy comes out to the ring and says, "I'm so good at being this champion." Then a guy will come out and his music will play and goes, "Hey, you, you've been champion for a while, but I'm going to be the champion." And, like, it's boring, whereas there's none of that. In Lucha Underground, they set everything up with these slick vignettes that are backstage that occasionally use magic and teleportation and all that kind of stuff. That's the way you do it.
They make much more out of the, like, backstage vignettes than entrances. Entrances aren't a big deal.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, one guy will just be in the ring. Which kind of underpins the idea that it's like the place where men settle disputes or whatever. You're not here to, like...
Yeah, the place where wizards settle disputes. Also, one other thing. When Alberto Del Rio showed up in one of these episodes, he showed up in a backstage segment and he was fucking brilliant at it. And his gimmick now is he's Alberto El Patron, which is Alberto, the boss. His whole thing is he's got to act like a sort of an upper-level management type. And that's it. But he does it so well.
He's amazing.
He was brilliant at it, and I don't understand. And well, no, I know exactly why. The way WWE directs their backstage segments, because they haven't evolved it since like 2001. It's impossible to get a strong performance out of these people that have to act organically, like they're improvising, except angled 2/3 toward the camera, and it's stupid. This one, they got a guy. They circled around Alberto and Johnny Mundo, and Alberto was just sort of like, look at me, I'm a boss-esque figure.
Yeah, that's a good difference between the WWE stuff and the Lucha Underground stuff. So that cutscene that you're talking about with Johnny Mundo and Alberto El Patron, the camera is just whirring around them and they're both acting. Like, they're not particularly good actors, but they're acting.
I think Alberto was
pretty good.
Yeah. All right, whatever. They're Oscar winners. I don't care. Yeah. So they're acting and they're told, like, all right, you're Alberto El Patron and you're Johnny Mundo. So act and, you know, here's your lines. Whereas WWE gives them lines and says, right, you are your gimmick. So you have to keep doing this gimmick all the time. And kayfabe is different from acting. And it just doesn't work when... Yeah. You're struggling with this kind of bland, almost formatless format for so long, and it's just no way, like, you can't buy into it in any way.
Mm.
like it doesn't acknowledge that it's fake, but is impossible to accept as real.
Yeah, and it is just as well. The lines they're handed are shit. How many, like Alberto Del Rio's thing for ages was, you're just going to tell them your name repeatedly, and it'll annoy them. Like,
yeah,
that's the where's the logic in that? Like that's fucking Dada-esque shit. That's Bunwell.
I think it's amazing that Morrison still seems a bit cagey and stuff when you put him in this sort of smaller scale, but Del Rio seems like a star.
Yeah.
And it really seems like, I know they pushed him and stuff, but yeah, he's great. Anyway, we know everything about Lucha Underground now, having known nothing.
Yeah.
Anyone got anything else to add?
I'll just sum up in case any of the executive producers from Lucha Underground are listening. The stuff that's unique about Lucha Underground is awesome. More of it. Just keep reducing the number of things that you're doing to appeal to a WWE audience. You don't need them.
You don't need anyone to blade themselves. Don't need that.
Yeah. Especially when you got the mask. The when the mask was coming off in the
Phoenix.
Yeah, great. It was fantastic. Yeah. Image. Yeah. But yeah. Just don't get too... less of the anxiety about appealing to a WWE audience. You don't need any of that shit. Your weird shit is brilliant. Show off more of it, and you'll be the best wrestling company in the world.
See you next time. Subscribe on iTunes and SoundCloud and all that
stuff. At Jumping Nothing on Twitter. Do that as well.
Bye.